Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Well, we have for you today the soundtrack from the documentary Stolen Honor, Wounds That Never Heal. This is John Kerry's testimony after he returned from Vietnam, a war in which he said American soldiers were dying for nothing. Of course, it was a war where brutal communists were trying to take over yet millions more people. And after that war, when we left, not because we lost on the battlefield, but we lost on the college campuses and in the media and with politicians who didn't have the courage to say that the communists were mass murderers. After that war, we left because of people like Bill and Hillary Clinton and John Kerry getting public opinion, especially the media, to turn against American victory against the communists. After we left, the beautiful people, the communists who took over South Vietnam from the North, they caused hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese people to flee for their lives in a massive humanitarian crisis that we call the boat people, where hundreds of thousands fled in fear of their lives. Countless Vietnamese slaughtered, butchered by the communist Vietnamese, as the communists had been doing for decades. Okay, so we're now going to go to the soundtrack of this documentary. It's the video that Sinclair Broadcasting has been planning on airing. They might air, they might not. Well, you're going to hear it right now on Bob Enyart Live, Stolen Honor, Wounds That Never Heal.
In other wars, captured Americans subjected to the hell of an enemy prison were considered heroes. In other wars, they were not abandoned. In Vietnam, they were betrayed. My name is Carlton Sherwood, and I'm a journalist. As an investigative reporter, I've written about corruption in government, corporations, and the military. I've helped to expose doctors who are actually ordering the starvation of handicapped infants, and charlatans who preach faith from the pulpit, but who practice greed and deception in their personal lives. In every case, the guilty parties dishonored their professions and were made to answer for the hurt they caused. Tonight's report is cut from the same cloth. Only for me, it's a lot more personal.
This is
4-3,
read you 5.
It's about a war I fought in and what I saw happening when I got back from it. It's about a treachery that was, in its own way, as frightening as the hand-to-hand combat I experienced as a young Marine. It is about what I felt when I first saw and heard this.
We are more guilty than any other body of violations of those Geneva Conventions in the use of free fire zones, harassment interdiction fire, search and destroy missions, the bombings, the torture of prisoners, the killing of prisoners, accepted policy by many units in South Vietnam.
Wait a second, I asked myself. Did I hear that right? Were my fellow Marines being accused of the same atrocities John Kerry had committed? Later in his testimony, he claimed American soldiers in Vietnam were guilty of even more heinous acts of barbarism.
They had personally raped, cut off ears, cut off heads, taped wires from portable telephones to human genitals and turned up the power, cut off limbs, blown up bodies, randomly shot at civilians, razed villages in a fashion reminiscent of Genghis Khan, shot cattle and dogs for fun, poisoned food stocks, and generally ravaged the countryside of South Vietnam.
As I heard John Kerry speak, I could feel an inner hurt no surgeon's scalpel could remove. I felt the honor of fighting for my country decomposing, just as surely as if all the battle ribbons had been stripped from my chest, leaving only torn patches where once the dignity of sacrifice had been. Yet if the words I heard dishonored the dead and the wounded, what must they have meant to my comrades still in battle? Or even worse, to those imprisoned in the torture chambers of the enemy? It is to the American prisoner of war in Vietnam this report is dedicated, and it is from their lips that the bitter truth will long last be heard. The decade-long war in Vietnam was the longest America ever fought, and the only foreign war America never won. Not that we didn't try. At its height, 540,000 American troops went to battle. More than 58,000 were killed and over 300,000 wounded. Twice as many bombs were dropped on the enemy than the combined United States-British bombing of Germany in World War II. The price paid in treasury exceeded $150 billion. The price exacted from the national spirit is still being paid today. In a cause lost more at home than on the battlefield, the reason for containing communism first enunciated by President Truman and later implemented by Presidents Kennedy and Johnson was undermined by voices at home that screamed protest and urged withdrawal. The only monuments to this war will be the dead, the maimed, the despairing, and the forlorn, one anonymous source is quoted as saying. This despondency not only divided our citizens, but encouraged our enemies to inflict even greater atrocities on American prisoners of war. People like Kenneth Courtier, John Jack Fellows, Ralph Gaither, Paul Galante, Carlisle Smitty Harris, Gordon Swede Larson, Thomas McNish, Robinson Reisner, Jack Van Loan, James Warner, Ronald Webb, Leo Thorsness, recipient of the Medal of Honor. What was home to many prisoners over 30 years ago was this place, a prison built by the French before they were run out of the country by the Vietnamese. Our prisoners called it the Hanoi Hilton. No one ever dared to call room service, since a knock on the door usually meant a beating or a sadistic interrogation. The cells were dank, barren, and shuttered from the sunlight. Communication between them was accomplished by a tap code the prisoners invented. But mostly the cells were sullen places with a foreboding silence broken often by screams of pain. And there was plenty of that to go around.
They'd bend you over double and pass a rope around your body and then jump up and down your back, pulling that rope tighter and tighter and tighter, cutting off all your circulation. And after a short time, it became extremely painful. And they had other types where they'd have U-bolts. They'd run a bar through your legs and put the weight of a heavy bar through these U-bolts through your ankles, and the weight of it would cut off circulation and create intense pain. The rope was the worst. It had lasting effects. Sometimes they'd tie your arms up with the rope so tight, a couple times they would cross my elbows behind my back, cut off circulation, and sometimes be days before you get feeling back in your hands. Everyone reached a point. You had to bend to their will. You just couldn't take it anymore.
Oh, they great torture to extract the confession out of you. I spent 14 hours in a rope trick. And when I came out, I couldn't move my arms. And they wanted me to write. If I can't write, I can't move. And I spent the next 6 months or so getting the arms back. I couldn't move from the shoulders down. And they wanted a confession. They wanted me to confess my crimes against the people. And this was going on all the time.
Interestingly enough, when they got through torturing you enough that you would, under duress, write something or do whatever they were after, the last thing they always asked for was required, asked for, demanded, that you write a statement saying, I have been well treated by the lenient and humane people of the Democratic Republic of North Vietnam. This was after they tortured you to get whatever else they wanted.
I was told by them the penalty was death, execution. And I was threatened. One time, I'll never forget it, where they said, unless you confess your crimes, tomorrow morning you'll be executed. Tomorrow morning came and I heard some guards march up. Obviously the execution didn't come, but it gives you pause for thought.
They had a standard torture technique that was used on almost everyone. And that was to put your hands in manacles, not handcuffs, manacles, which are clamps that you can't move, behind you, behind your back, and then put ropes around your upper arms and tighten up on them until the elbows touch. And then they just go away and leave you until you screamed loud enough and long enough, and they'd come in, loosen the ropes, and resume the interrogations. The first time that happened to me, they released the bonds and continued the interrogation. I started giving them some answers, which they quickly deduced were largely false. And so they put me back in the ropes, and as they were tying me up again, I yelled at the interrogator. I was still pretty brave at this point. I said, "You're barbarians. You're torturing me, and I'm injured. I need to see a doctor, not be tortured. Oh, what is wrong with you?" And I said, "My back is broken. I'm in a lot of pain." Well, that was a big mistake, because in addition to being put in the ropes, they hogtied me, put a rope around my neck and my ankles, and arched my back backwards. And then I found out later that this was also standard treatment. Every guy that had an injury, they tortured the injury to break them more quickly. A broken arm would be twisted behind his back, or a broken leg, put him in a chair and twist the leg behind him. That was standard treatment. Very pragmatic. It made the guy break quicker.
Those who resisted torture to the point where they lost control of their mental faculties, became totally psychologically separated from reality, developed extreme phases of psychosis, the Vietnamese would just allow them to starve themselves to death rather than keeping them as everlasting mementos of their inhumanity.
And dozens of Americans were killed in captivity, though the true number may never be known. If such brutality was not severe enough on the average day, it was even worse when Jane Fonda, Tom Hayden, and other anti-war activists came to visit. The Vietnamese wanted to exploit their condemnation of America, and our prisoners were expected to be a responsive audience. They were ordered to behave, if not applaud, and were guaranteed the best seats in the house for every performance.
Jane Fonda, in turn, when she came there, made tapes that were played in our cells. I never saw her face to face, but she made tapes that indicated that we were criminals and that any punishment we were receiving from the North Vietnamese was legitimate and we deserved it, and that we should be punished.
One of our biggest problems with hang-ups was, how in the world could our government allow these people to come over there without a visa, without authorization, against the law, visit a country that we're fighting and give aid and comfort to them while we're sitting there languishing in those prison cells? It's hard to fathom.
They drew a circle on the floor, stone floor with a piece of chalk, and I was to stand in that circle. And I lasted 97 hours in that circle, but when I finally gave it up, I, of course, got into it with a guard, and I got beaten up pretty bad after that and broke some teeth. But while I was in that circle, I was able to see the front gate And I saw Tom Hayden enter the camp, and I saw Mary McCarthy enter the camp. And of course, they were hyped at that time as being visitors to North Vietnam, and never met them face to face, but I was allowed to see this activity coming through the gate of the camp, to influence me that Americans were obviously opposed to the war, and that I ought to be also.
I was in pain a lot of the time. I was being treated inhumanely. It was difficult for me, although the Vietnamese tried to get us to believe, and I know that we had more than one person come to Vietnam who was, the Vietnamese told me that these people said they were winning the war in the streets of America. I certainly didn't approve of that. I didn't think it was right for an American to come over and bolster the Vietnamese morale.
You're listening to the soundtrack of Stolen Honor, Wounds That Never Heal, regarding John Kerry's testimony to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on April 22, 1971. This is Bob Enyart reminding you that John Kerry characterized the American servicemen in Vietnam as war criminals, guilty of torture, cutting off ears, rape, beheadings, poisoning food supplies, murder, accusing the American servicemen of systematic atrocities. In the war in Iraq, I'm thankful that there were hundreds of embedded journalists who, because of their reporting real time from the front, they've moved to help heal and restore the honor of the American soldier. So let's now return to continue with the soundtrack of Stolen Honor, Wounds That Never Heal.
In the case of Jim Stockdale, Admiral Stockdale, they wanted him to meet a delegation. And he came up with the idea of blackening his own eye to keep from meeting that delegation. He picked up a stool and smashed that stool in his face twice to blacken his eyes so that he wouldn't have to meet that delegation. And as a result, he was severely tortured and didn't meet the delegation, but he went through hell for his actions.
American prisoners of war, like any other Americans, were, if nothing else, ingenious. They found ways in the most dire of circumstances to confound the enemy and knock his best-laid deceptions off stride. As when Admiral Jeremiah Denton blinked the word torture in Morse code while being forced to make a false confession by his captors.
I happened to have found out about a tap code that was used in World War II, and I shared it with the other guys. And because that was so early on, we were all the early shoot downs, that when we got back to our cells and we're back in solitary confinement, we immediately started using that tap code, and it had not been taught to everyone. And it was the code that we used from then on out through our incarceration to communicate between cells. For a long time, you know, they heard it and I guess didn't pay much attention to it. And they finally realized that we really were being able to communicate. And in some places, they demanded absolute silence. But we just found other ways to communicate by flashing a hand or a piece of paper under a crack that someone could breathe across the way, or to use coughs and sneezes and hacks and for 1 through 5. And we just found more secure ways that they could not identify as tapping to communicate. They never shut us down.
Little did the American prisoners of war imagine that halfway around the world, events were conspiring to make their precarious situation even more desperate. That an American naval lieutenant, after a 4-month tour of duty in Vietnam, was meeting secretly in an undisclosed location in Paris with a top enemy diplomat. That this same lieutenant
had joined forces with Jane Fonda's anti-war efforts and was the spokesman for the so-called Vietnam Veterans Against the War, many of whom would later be discovered as frauds, men who had never set foot on the battlefield or left the comfort of the States, or even served in uniform, except in mock contempt of the military. Their lurid fantasies of butchery in Vietnam were seized upon by John Kerry to help him organize the so-called Winter Soldiers investigation, the template he would use to brand all Vietnam veterans.
Is there something that you really kind of want to say in terms of the crimes and why they happened? What brings you here? What makes you say, I want to testify, I want to say something?
I'd almost need a book to answer that now. It's like just so many things bothered me about just that short period that I was over there.
Never mind, many of the horror stories seem made up on the spot.
You might be able to come up with that. I was trying to find somebody that knew something about a Ville wiped out in Quang Tri.
Right, I was there.
You got that.
Because that was, we went into the area, and it was to set the example to show that we weren't f***ing around. So the first thing we do was burn down the village and kill everybody.
Okay, whenever they're questioning me, they'll have to get me to elaborate on that, because I don't know. I forget all about that one.
How could you forget that? I remembered it, and I wasn't even in on it.
This was the, quote, evidence John Kerry would swear to before the U.S. Senate. Testimony that would quickly travel halfway around the world to convince our prisoners that back home they stood accused and abandoned.
The country doesn't know it yet, but it's created a monster. A monster in the form of millions of men who have been taught to deal and to trade in violence, and who are given the chance to die for the biggest nothing in history.
Stop the tape. Stop the tape. This is Bob Inyart. You're listening to Bob Inyart Live, the soundtrack of Stolen Honor. That was John Kerry. John Kerry, American naval lieutenant, testifying before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, saying that the war in Vietnam was the biggest nothing in history, where the communists had been denying people, robbing people of life, of liberty, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, torturing people. And America was trying to stop yet another nation, South Vietnam, from falling to the communists. And John Kerry, with so many left-wingers of his day, took the side of the brutal, murdering Vietnamese army and regimes, and accused American servicemen, characterized our soldiers as guilty of torture, cutting off ears, rape, beheadings, poisoning food supplies, murder, of systematic atrocities, taking the wrong side. Let's return to the soundtrack.
He doesn't know it yet, but it's created a monster. A monster in the form of millions of men who have been taught to deal and to trade in violence, and who are given the chance to die for the biggest nothing in history. Men who have returned with a sense of anger and a sense of betrayal which no one has yet grasped. And we cannot consider ourselves America's best men when we were ashamed of and hated what we were called on to do in Southeast Asia.
Enemy propagandists had found a new and willing accomplice. And for some prisoners, the consequences were swift and deeply personal.
The interrogator showed me a transcript of testimony that my mother had given at something called the Winter Soldier hearings. I read her testimony, and it wasn't damning, but then I saw some of the other stuff that had gone on at this Winter Soldier hearing. I wondered, how did somebody get my mother persuaded to come appear at something like this? And then shortly thereafter, he showed me some statements from John Kerry. I know that he did talk to her, and he talked to my sisters. And I really don't know what was in their minds to participate in this, but I do know this, and that is, you know, it is really a contemptible act to take a grieving old lady and use prey upon her grief and manipulate her grief for purely for the promotion of your own political agenda.
If the Kerry accusations weren't disturbing enough, the timing of them raises even more serious questions about the motive and character of the accuser.
In 1971, when Kerry delivered his Stop the Killing, End the War manifesto, the war had all but ended. Less than half of our army remained in Vietnam. A year later, they too would be gone. Yet to the average American combatant, having been branded by Kerry as a demon and a murderer, getting out of Vietnam alive was a high-risk adventure. But in 1971, there were also 700 prisoners still being held in Hanoi, mostly American pilots, now pawns in a deadly international game of face-saving. Their lives hung by a thread, their fate entirely in the hands of a pitiless enemy who had shown no compunction about inflicting pain, torture, and death on their defenseless captives. Now their nightly tap codes on prison cell walls not only spoke of reprisals from a ruthless enemy, but the new peril that threatened their chances of ever returning home again. The damning words of an American naval lieutenant they once called their own.
The interrogator went through all of these statements from John Kerry, and he starts pounding on the table. See, here, this naval officer, he admits that you are a criminal and that you deserve punishment. Well, look, they told us this is a camp for punishment. We're in solitary confinement. When a guy starts pounding the table, and you can spot this in them, when they start, their voice starts to rise, their face gets red, that's usually a sign that something bad is about to happen.
The things he said were just devastating, because he was talking about using the words like war criminal and that kind of stuff. As a prisoner of war, we were being told we're war criminals and that we'll be tried for war crimes, and unless we confess and ask for forgiveness and badmouth the war and take their side in the war, we'll never go home. I mean, you talk, and then here's a guy at home. He's been in Vietnam, see, I have some respect for the person who went over there. And now he swaps to the other side, and he's saying the same things we're being tortured to say. That was a very difficult time.
Stop the tape. This is Bob Benyard. We're listening to the soundtrack from Stolen Honor regarding John Kerry's testimony when he returned from Vietnam. Tomorrow, we'll listen to the conclusion of this documentary, Lord willing, based on freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press. We'll bring you the rest of this documentary. And I want to make it clear that this broadcast should not be construed as an endorsement of George W. Bush. But of course, we want to always get the truth out on every issue. Hey, I got to tell you about Bob and Yart Live and our Bible study materials. You know what's exciting about understanding the Bible? The confidence that it gives you in life. When you deal with others in business, neighbors, friends, and family, you come from a position of strength when you have a solid overview of the Word of God. That's why I recommend to you The Plot, our best-selling manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible. 330 pages. You could get it online at our website at kgov.com, or get it from us at 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. And if you live in the Denver area, I want to tell you about Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada. Over 100 staff members, a beautiful 20-acre campus, Christ-centered, top academics, and all of this for your children. They have kindergarten through 12th grade. Their phone number, 303-431-5653. That's 431-5653. And remember, KGov, our website. Tell your friends to tune in to the soundtrack of Stolen Honor, KGOV.com.